So I'm either possessed or I have food poisoning.
What was it that you needed?
I need a young priest and an old priest and some holy water. Ouija boards open the gates of hell. That's why I haven't consulted.
And you need to rent your priest from the nearest Home Depot, right?
I mean, I just said Priest Depot. I don't know what kind of Home Depots you have out in California.
The ones that rent priests, apparently. I've got
to pick up a drill and a bandsaw. And, priest. Forgot about
that. A couple priests, yeah.
I can see them just, like, sitting in the basket as you wheel them around.
Gotta be, like, the child seat, you know? There's probably other jokes in there, too.
Yeah, there definitely were.
Hi, I'm Steve.
And I'm Zach, and this is Fireside Swift.
How's it going, Zach?
I feel like death.
Yeah, I know. I heard you're feeling a little under the weather.
Yeah, I'm not feeling the best, but this is one of the highlights of my week is getting on here and talking to you and interacting with listeners. So.
Oh, I thought you were about to say the highlight of your week is being sick.
Yeah, I do it once a week. I try to switch up the days. You know, don't want to get into a rut.
Yeah, that's best. Especially if you can do it on a day that you're working, because then like you have an excuse for taking the day off.
That's true. That's true.
This is not really good to have it on a Sunday, though.
I feel bad enough today that I know I'm not going into work tomorrow. Like, I'm exhausted. So I have no idea what this show's about to be. You may hear me pass out about halfway through.
We just hear it a loud bang.
If you hear that, just keep on trucking. Don't even worry about it.
Yeah, so I guess for a podcaster, it is definitely better for when you get sick to it not be a respiratory illness, but be a gastrointestinal illness.
Yes.
And so from what you've told me, you feel like puking. Yes. So luckily, we don't hear that unless you start retching.
And that's, there's a solid 25% chance of that any given moment.
All right, so we'll try to get through this fast, and hopefully we do not get to that. And I promise everybody listening that if it comes to that, I will have cut it out anyways, so you won't hear anything.
Wow. I'm finally getting edited out of the show.
Yep.
It's too bad.
So do we have any feedback from previous episodes? Follow-up, right? Not feedback.
Follow-up. Yes, we do have some follow-up. In fact, this follow-up is inside of the Learn Swift podcast that dropped this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Apparently, I'm now up to 3 people that would eat me. And not only am I up to 3 people that would eat me, Stephen Cherry, the host of that podcast, he wouldn't even wait to get hungry.
That makes sense, because I'm assuming it's going to take a while to actually, like, finish cooking you. So I mean, like, we got to kill you first.
Yeah,
then we have to like drain you. Yep. And then we need to like, you know, prepare you and cook you. So that takes a while. I wouldn't want to start that while I'm hungry.
True, because you don't want to eat this raw.
Yeah, like, exactly.
No sashimi.
Yeah.
That's not what you want to do. I figure, you know, if I'm ever in a situation where all 4 of us are stuck on a desert island, I'll start selling tickets to the buffet.
All right.
Line everybody up.
You already understand your place. This is good.
Yep. I'm outnumbered now. When it was just you, I was like, okay, there's a chance. And then you and Joe, was like, possibly. And now 3 against 1, it the odds are stacking up, in y'all's favor, not mine.
Yep, yeah. So that's good.
We have a very Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, very Lord of the Flies. Yeah, definitely not. Well, I mean, Lord of the Rings,
there is definitely eating of hobbits.
Yeah,
or they want to eat the hobbits.
Or at least biting off. Yeah, there was the eating. Orcs wanted to eat the hobbits.
Yeah. And we did say that we would be the Merry and Pip.
Yeah, so.
I mean, it makes sense.
Makes sense.
Except this would be, Merry eating Pippin, which isn't.
Yeah, it'd be a little weird.
It'd be strange, but
maybe.
We'll see.
Yeah,
And once again, we are already off the rails.
That's what we do here. Another bit of follow-up is Two Straws. Don't have the real name of this person, but Two Straws, or at Two Straws, on Twitter. He made a Xcode extension called Sharpshooter. And
So real quick, Two Straws is Paul from hackingwithswift.com.
Oh, okay. I couldn't figure that out. Okay, yeah. Cool.
And I think he's 2 Chainz' cousin.
Okay.
That's how that goes.
So he made a Xcode extension. And I'm gonna guess he misunderstood us.
No, I just love that he listened to this episode, our last episode, and wanted to do this.
So he took what we had to say about debugging and using print statements debug, and he took it in an entirely different direction.
They now show up everywhere.
His extension adds print statements to every one of your functions.
Which is exactly what we were talking about.
Not quite.
I absolutely love that he went out and did this. That makes me so happy.
I laughed so hard when I saw this. Bravo. Bravo.
And I love his analogy and why he named it Sharpshooter as well. He named it Sharpshooter after the story of a Texas gunslinger where he would, you know, fire at a barn wall and then go paint the target around the closest group of shots so he could be considered a sharpshooter.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, I hit that target about 9 out of 10 times, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to figure out how this works just so I can install it and run it once.
Yeah.
I have to. Thank you so much, Paul.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's an honor to... Is it an honor?
It is. I'm going to take it as an honor.
To have an extension made based on something I said, sort of.
Yeah, no, I'll let you take all the credit for that one.
Yeah.
Because we all know that in this relationship, it would be you that would do that. Obviously.
Yeah, probably.
Obviously.
Obviously. So, this is actually a perfect intro to what we're going to talk about today. Because if you want to get this extension, you got to get on GitHub and you've got to download it. And, well, geez, that can be pretty tough for a new person, right? Somebody who's just fresh into Swift.
It is exceedingly hard for a new person. So real quick, Git and GitHub, it's kind of a source version control piece of software where, you know, all the code you write can then be backed up somewhere else. And you can control what version of code you're working on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's for version controlling, it's for collaboration, so you can actually merge code together. It's particularly great for not being able to lose the changes that you've made and being able to track what you've done. Be able to remove the fear of failure out of coding.
Right. Cause... Well, I think of it, again, I play games. I think of it as a checkpoint system.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You get to a certain point, you check all of your code in, and then you can keep working on it. And if you screw something up locally, you just pull back, all of the code that you checked in earlier.
Well, of course, it's way more advanced than that, too. Imagine if you could go back to any checkpoint and any checkpoint you've ever had and then go back there and then make things better and then also but I like some of the stuff that I did on this checkpoint and being able to combine those two and also get a group of 10 people also all playing the same game at the same time. And if they do something good, you can take their bit of something that did good. So it's like checkpoints, except way cooler. That's how I view Git.
I love that analogy. Like checkpoints, but way cooler. How many Y's are in that way?
Why? I'm thinking a whole bunch of A's and then
You're going A. Way. You're drawing out the middle.
Yeah, the middle. Yeah.
I want to say Y. Way. E.
No, see, that's E. Yeah.
Yeah. E. Yeah. Okay, we'll do it.
Y. E. Yeah, that's okay. Where I'd go with that.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Either that is W E I G H.
That is not the same.
With a bunch of H's. Mm-hmm. Way. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyways, so we're gonna be talking about Git today.
Indeed, we are.
Long story short, I mean, I guess Zach, why don't you just dive into like what is the, textbook description of Git?
Okay, so Git, as defined by the textbooks, is a fast and scalable distributed revision control system with an unusually rich command set that provides both high-level operations and full access to internals. Which makes sense to everybody, right?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to everybody. That's why we read these definitions out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. So let's break this down. So when it says it's fast, scalable, and distributed, do you want to take those one at a time or cover all three at once?
Sure.
Sure.
Let's take it one at a time. That's kind of what I meant to say. Let's take the first one. Fast. Some version control systems are slow. I can't think of any of them right now. Zach, have you worked with any other version control systems and some that can be pretty nasty?
I have worked with Google Code back when that was offered a few years ago. They discontinued it. And I work with SVN.
Okay. Yeah, I've done some SVN work. And SVN is not much slower than Git, but probably at the micro level.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
But that's kind of out of my realm of thought. If I remember right, Git was developed by Linus Torvald, the guy who made
Linux. Was it really?
Yeah, I believe so. I could be completely wrong and just that might be a legend.
Linus, hit us up if it wasn't you.
Yeah,
let us know.
Right? Right? But and anybody else, if I'm wrong, just hit me up on Twitter and just publicly declare me as wrong.
It's fine. If we're doing we're doing this podcast. Yeah. We're going to be wrong in public plenty of times.
Plenty of times. But anyways, I believe this was made by Linus for making Linux, and so obviously he needed something that was quick because dealing with large files and all sorts of different things, it needs to be scalable. Because the things he's kind of working with, particularly with Linux, were huge and also distributed. He had a multitude of people around the world all working on one operating system, and so obviously need to work in all of those cases. So
exactly. Yeah, it's a way to collaborate with people that you may not necessarily see all the time because you're looking at the same code base.
Yeah, and I know like one of the ways it's able to achieve fast and scalable is it's like as you are making changes to your files and it's like recording, like saving those snapshots we talked about, the checkpoints and whatnot, as it's saving those things, it's not saving all of your files again and then saving, moving forward in time and then saving all those files again. It's saving the changes to those files.
Right.
And that's what helps it be fast and scalable.
Yes.
No. Distributed is a much harder problem to solve. And this is where Subversion falls flat on its face, in my opinion.
Wow.
And yeah. Wow.
I can't wait to hear about this.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Subversion has one master repository. You've got a server that you have your master repository on, and then everybody that's working on that same code base all downloads clones down from that master.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to make a change that everybody sees, you got to push it up to that master and everybody pulls it down. If you lose that master repository, you lose your history. And so that's why I would say it is not a distributed version control system. Whereas Git, if I clone the master repository like we do on GitHub, I get all the code as it is right now plus all the history.
Oh, okay. So you get to go back in time and see who made what changes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on my local device.
Nice.
So if something happens to that that master repository and we need to fix it by, anybody who's cloned the repository can fix the one that's on the master. Like, we could just take theirs and use theirs as the new repository.
That's awesome. I know for a fact that Google Code did not work that way.
Yeah.
Do you want to know how I know?
How do you know that?
So, and this is something else that I realized earlier when I was listening to last week's episode. I have a fail story for like every topic we cover. People are probably listening to this thinking, how is this guy working in software? Like, so here is this episode's failure.
Yeah, we've talked about failing forward, right?
So yeah, this is, yeah, sure. And, yeah,
you learn more from failures than you do from success.
And, oh, boy, did I learn from this failure.
What happened?
First semester of grad school, I was a remote student, so I would take the same classes as on-campus students took, but I would watch videos. Like, they would record all the lessons. Okay. And I would watch them. One of those classes was required a group project. So okay. Group project for a remote student is going to be kind of difficult, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were other remote students in the class. There were three of us in a group. I was paired up with another remote student and one on-campus student.
Okay.
We wanted to actually make a mobile Android app. Okay. So we started... You know, the first few lectures, or the first few presentations we had to give were all about our user stories and just writing up the correct documentation. Mm-hmm. And we had to give a presentation every few weeks. Well, then it came time to actually start delivering code.
Okay.
And we decided to use Google Code as our repository of choice since we were spread out and one of my teammates had used it before on a different project. So I said, you know, this is all new to me. I will do whatever you ask me to do. All
right.
So we got it up and it was working fine. Everybody was checking their code in and out, you know, all their files in and out until it was about 2 days before we had another presentation. I had just made a ton of changes to a ton of files.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Do you see where this is going?
Yep.
Can you? Yeah. I'm using a new system that I was unfamiliar with, really.
Uh-huh.
It was late. I was tired. I had to get up for work early the next morning. I was like, okay, here we go. And I don't even remember what commands I did. And I sent it off. I woke up the next morning to a few unhappy, let's say, emails.
Well, what did you do?
I managed to upload the entire repository into the root of the original repository.
Okay.
So everything had been duplicated and the tree was absolutely and completely corrupted.
Wow.
Yeah, and like I said, this was about a day before our presentation. And luckily the guys on my team realized what had happened before they pulled down any changes. Because, you know, my email to them was like, hey, I made these changes today. Feel free to pull it down. Luckily, they didn't listen to me. the guy who had used Google Code before spent 3 or 4 hours going through and cleaning up absolutely everything. So jeez. What you're saying is that with Git, he could have just re-uploaded his master?
Yes. Yeah, you could have wiped out the old or the one that you corrupted, and then just taken his repository and put it on the server, and then you can pull that down
and start and, over.
You start over. That, yeah. And of course, you'd lose the changes that you made, but the changes that you made were ones that need to be lost. So
right. Well, no, actually, that's the other thing. The changes I made were good. It was the way I uploaded the files that corrupted everything.
Okay. Yeah. That so you still lose. Part. You would lose those changes. You'd have to figure out how to, get those back.
Well, here's the thing. I still had those files on my computer, right?
Okay. So I could just go through
and just re-upload the files I had to the master repository and do it that way and do it correctly. I think after that, I ended up sending them the files I needed uploaded because I was like, I was so gun-shy.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not touching this the rest of the semester.
I think so. That's better than me because when I started grad school, like all the way through grad school, I didn't even know about any sort of version control systems at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't use any. And so like Dropbox was my version control. Like I would copy folders. Maybe like here's the project on this date, and I'll make a copy. And then here's the project on this date, and that was my version control.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the fact that it was on Dropbox meant that it was on multiple computers and on the cloud.
Yeah.
Quotes around the cloud.
You had it everywhere.
And yeah. So that was my way of version control. My first experience was right after grad school. It was with my own, I just started my own app development company. We were doing iOS apps, and was working on our first app, and my business partner was like, oh, I heard of this thing called Subversion. Let's try to use this. I went, okay. So the mistake we made was that, or I guess it would be me. I think he did the same thing, though.
Hey, he's not on here to defend himself. It's all him. Just
right,
throw him right under that bus.
So we both cloned the repository into a Dropbox folder. So can you imagine this? so the whole...
Was it a shared Dropbox folder?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I would make a change and then try to submit it to Subversion. But remember... With Subversion, it's hidden files that change. And so, like, even those, like, Dropbox would sync those. And so if we were working on the same program at the same time, it would screw up everything. Like, I would lose changes. He would lose changes. And be like, when is this supposed to happen? This is the whole thing for having... I got a huge bad taste in my mouth from Subversion. Really, Subversion's not that bad, but I was implementing it wrong.
Correct. And that's the thing, I think, with any sort of version control, it takes a little while to kind of get used to and understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, like, even in my day job, I use Subversion every day. The very first time I used it, I ended up... So we have a file structure where you know, four files are like the top level, and then you click into that to drill down, you know, maybe five or six steps to get to the actual source code.
Okay.
The first time I made a change, my boss was like, okay, now just check that, he said check that file in, and I understood that to mean check the entire folder in. And I did it, and I built it out, and I was all happy. And one of my coworkers came and said, "Hey, have you seen the website?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" And it was completely ripped apart. Like, there was no styling. I was like, "What happened?" And I found out, because my local build path and class path is completely different than what is actually used. On the website itself.
Yeah.
So, you know, he went back and he uploaded his stuff to it, and everything was good after that. But yeah, I mean, it there's a learning curve there.
There's definitely a learning curve. And of course, there's like a lot of that stuff is also team based. So, and in your case, environment based.
Yep.
So you had a certain environment, the team had a different environment. And, you know, when you were taking your code that you know is good and you want to merge it in with everybody else's code, you have to recognize the rules involved in that.
Exactly.
And so some companies will have configuration manager. That's like the job, configuration management, where their entire job is to keep the repository in order.
That sounds...
Like that's it.
That sounds like a terrible job, honestly.
Yeah,
like,
I would... Oh, yeah. It's to me, that's up there with like Scrum Master of like scary jobs that are like this is going to involve a lot of like making sure that everybody's doing the right thing and a lot of stress and hair pulling out that you really can't control. You're just the negotiator.
Exactly. That's, by the way, have you heard the description of what Scrum and Agile actually are?
No.
It's
I don't know.
It's a software development technique where you and a bunch of people get together in a circle for 10 minutes every day and ask each other the same three questions until everybody dies.
Well, that's true. That is absolutely true.
Okay, but I digress. Back.
What did I do yesterday? What am I doing today?
And what is blocking?
Do I have any?
Yep.
Do I have any blockers?
Yep, exactly.
All right, so yeah, so okay, so we talked around configuration management and whatnot. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Let's talk about some of the tools available to programmers out there.
Okay.
So number one, there's GitHub.
Right, and I think this is probably the most popular.
Yep, and I would say this is the reason why we're talking about Git tonight, because I'd say if it weren't for the community around Git, there would be another version control system that would be more popular that we would be talking about now, like Mercurial or something like that.
I agree.
In fact, I've heard Mercurial is way easier to use than Git, but because Git is so popular, it's hard to
bite into that customer base.
Yep, it is. So really, we're talking about Git because of GitHub, and GitHub makes it super easy to start your own repository. This is why, like, just about like all the CocoaPods that you install, you can find their GitHub page, because CocoaPods uses Git for pulling down the pods.
Yep. Sharpshooter, like we discussed earlier,
on GitHub.
On GitHub. Yep. Go look it up.
I mean, we even created a GitHub page for Fireside Swift because it was so easy to make. We thought we would do some programming like for each of these episodes. Now it turns out that making the programs took a little more time than we expected.
Yeah,
but making the repository was much easier.
Exactly. Yeah, no, getting that up and running was not a problem. But it came down to, do I want to write quality show notes or do I want to write the programs?
Yep, exactly. So, GitHub's there. Bitbucket is another popular
tool. Oh, I have Bitbucket.
Cool.
But yep. Bitbucket's built on top of Git.
Yep. Yeah, so both these. GitHub is not, like, they didn't invent Git.
Right.
They don't own Git. Git is open source.
Right.
So GitHub is just a service around Git, just like Bitbucket is. It allows you, like, they will host your repository on their servers, and if you want it to be private, you pay a fee. I think
Bitbucket is private by default, and then you pay for it to be open, and GitHub's the opposite.
But I think, like, even with Bitbucket, like, they only allow, like, two or three private repos.
I think it's five. But I haven't looked at it. That's what I hosted my my master's project on.
There you go.
It was Bitbucket. Okay. So I think a few years ago it was five. I don't know. I haven't done anything on Bitbucket since then, so I could be wrong.
And I have to say, Git is actually really easy to set up a server on your own Linux computer. So, I'm trying to think back in the day, I had like an AWS server, like an
Amazon
EC2.
Web. Yep.
Yeah, like Amazon Web Services, AWS. I had like an EC2 server or instance.
Yep.
So EC2... They have great naming conventions there at Amazon. So EC2 is their virtual machine servers.
Yep.
So it's basically a server in the cloud, and you can put any operating system you want on it, as long as it's within their choices. It's like you could have any color you want, but as long as it's black. in this case, they've got a few choices. You choose it, they have all, several flavors of Linux on there, Windows. Mac is not an option, so you can't have Mac OS. But, so I grabbed a Linux, I created a simple Linux instance, and I went through the instructions on git-scm.com.
Okay.
That's M as in Mary. So I went through the documentation there, and they walk you through how to create a Git server on your own instance, and even how to lock it down. So if somebody, so only you with your key, your SSH keys, they'll walk you through making SSH keys, mm-hmm. and so only you can log in into it, which can make it difficult. You then have to know how, if somebody else wants to access it, you need to make sure that you get the keys from them and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But this is what I did for for my company when I first started out with me, because I had a very small team. And so we got each other's keys and we hosted our own server because we didn't want to pay GitHub for a private repository.
Right.
And we didn't know Bitbucket existed. Yeah. Nice. So, which is funny because we use SourceTree.
What is SourceTree? I've never used SourceTree.
So, all right. Have you ever tried to use Git on the terminal?
Yes.
Command line?
Yes.
Is that like your normal way of using Git?
Yes,
or?
It is.
Okay,
so Git
weird.
From the command line or a GUI?
I guess maybe you're not that weird, because like I'll bet you if I ask that question to like everybody, like there's probably a ton of people who do this, and more power to you. But
well, I will also say that my Git usage is fairly minimal. Like it's very straightforward.
Yeah. For me, and I think for a lot of people, I was literally just listening to ATP, and they were just talking about this, how they use it, and. I think Marco uses Git on the terminal. Casey does not, and John does use it on the terminal. But
I'm in good company.
Like, but well, but
no,
with John, stop. He said he only uses it on the terminal. He uses it on the terminal because he believes that's the right way to do it. Except he can't really use Git because he cannot figure out its asinine. Commands for everything.
I can see that. I can see that. But
And even Marco said that he pulls out Git Tower, which is a GUI for using or manipulating Git repositories and being able to do all the things you want to do with Git. He used Git Tower and when he needs to do something really complicated.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think Casey said something similar. I think he said he bounces into the terminal sometimes, but mostly uses a GUI.
Interesting. I may have to look into using a GUI.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of how I feel about Git is that I would love to be able to do everything I could do with Git on the terminal, but it is so, like the commands are so confusing to me that I just don't even waste my time on that. Like I download a GUI. And I usually use SourceTree. That's my GUI of choice.
Okay.
It's free. It's by the company Atlassian.
Oh, yeah.
Which also makes Bitbucket
yes,
and Jira.
Yes. And
so,
I'm fairly sure they own Trello now as well.
Yes, they bought Trello. Supposedly that's going to get integrated into their other products, but
fairly large company backs this technology.
Yes. We use Atlassian at work, and I haven't seen the niceties of Trello come into the stuff we use.
Okay.
Not yet.
<Yeah.
laughs> I'm hoping. But yeah, haven't seen that trickle down yet. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have options. We all like options.
You have options. Yeah. But I will say this too, like a GUI is not going to solve all of your problems. Even with SourceTree, which is great, it provides a lot of the useful, complicated functions that you need to do with Git sometimes. Even with that, it doesn't include like creating a new repository. Like if you want to make a brand new repository, you cannot do that in SourceTree.
Really?
Yeah, it won't let you do
Interesting.
It. You can't do stuff like force push.
So when you how do you create your new repository then?
So, I mean, if you're using GitHub, GitHub makes it for you. But if you're using your own server, what you need to do is, you know, get onto your server and type git init, I think it's like --bare, and then you type in what it's called, you know, what the name of the repository is.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So
I'm sure there's instructions out there somewhere.
There is instruction. Yeah, there are instructions out there. I know you need to have it bare, because if it's not bare, it complains at you. But you can change that later if you forget. So there's help for you on that somewhere. So
that's nice.
Yeah. But it's too bad. It's not as easy as just like, you know, git create new repository
and
you know,
done.
Here's the name.
Yep.
Yeah, git init, and then here's my name. No, that doesn't work. You can, yeah. So that's. Yeah, it kind of goes into like some of the problems with Git.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. So
anyways,
so do you want to dive into the actions a little bit?
Sure. So we were just talking about one. You know, like there's several things you could do with Git, and obviously the first thing you want to do is create a new repository. So that's the command is called init. So like initialize,
right.
It's, you know, shortened for that. But mainly, if you're using GitHub or Bitbucket, let those services do this for you.
Yes, I've never actually gone through and created my own.
Yeah, so it's really, really easy to create your own repository on GitHub. Just go through that process. There's a link, and you could use that for doing the next action that is like the most common action in GitHub or Git, and that is clone.
Yeah.
By the way, it sounds like you're getting a fax back there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure what's going on there.
Do you actually have a fax machine?
No, we do not. I have automatic locks on my door, and it just hit 10 o'clock, and I guess the door's not shut all the way.
Oh, so just interesting.
Kept trying to close.
I mean, I was trying to lock you in your room.
Is that what that was? Just,
yeah.
Okay. That's, wow. Wow. So now all of a sudden I'm like veal?
Well, yeah. I mean,
yeah. Okay. Apparently. I'm going to need to take care of that after the show.
Yeah. That's interesting. That actually, like, it literally sounded like a printer or a fax machine.
Yeah, no, I was sitting here, I was like, what is that? I was looking around the room, and I realized, oh, it's the garage door trying to lock.
Nice. Yep. Very nice. All right, so once you have initialized your repository, now you want to do something called clone. You want to make a copy of that repository.
Okay.
And so, basically, what you need is the HTTPS link to that repository and login credentials.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're using GitHub, you need to know what your username and password is to be able let me check that. If it's a public repository, you don't need your username and password.
Right.
If it's a private repository, then you do need your username and password.
Right.
So, okay. Depending on... Yeah, what the security settings of that repo are.
And so that will create that repository, or that will clone that repository in whatever folder. Like if you're in the command line, you cd into a folder, git clone, whatever, and then as soon as you run that, it'll download all of those files into that folder.
I believe so, and I believe you can specify which folder. Practically never clone on the terminal. So in Sourcetree, it's just a really easy, let me look at it real quick. Oh, there's a new repository button, and then it says, you know, clone from URL. I click on that, I provide the URL. I make sure I know which destination path, you know, where do I want to save this repository, and then I can name it, I can give it a nickname too.
Oh, cool.
So it doesn't have to be named exactly the same thing as the repository, because like, oftentimes, like, repositories have the same name as other repositories, so you'd be like, this is not the same one.
Right.
This is the one that this guy made.
Right.
So, yeah, so on and so forth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so now we get into a series of where we're actually putting our code on the server in the repository. And it's I like that it's broken down into a granular level. The way it is, there you have to do multiple actions before your code actually makes it into the repository.
Well, I mean, I'd say it's like one action to make it into the repository, but it's your local repository.
Okay. So, I was talking about going into the like GitHub.
You were thinking this.
Yeah, the shared repository. So
that's the difference between this and Subversion or like SharePoint or one of those other types of repositories. In Git, you have a repository that's local on your computer, and then there's also a repository that's on the server, and they are practically the same.
Oh, and real quick, so when you're creating a new project in Xcode, there's a checkbox.
Yeah. So that's that's a new
integration. May want to bring that up.
Yeah, no, I haven't really used it, but yeah, now Xcode 9 has integration into GitHub, right?
In Xcode 8, you could say create a local Git repository.
Oh, yeah, that's
what I was
good point.
About.
Yeah, okay.
And so
even in 9, they made it even better.
I haven't looked at 9.
You're right. I forgot about that. Yeah, when you're creating a new Xcode project, yeah, you could click that button. It says make a local Git repository, and it will do the Git init stuff for you. The one difference is it's only a local repository. Right.
It's not on GitHub or Bitbucket until you actually link the two and push your changes.
And so, like, if your house burns down and you've got a really valuable project on your computer and your computer's in your house, guess what? You've lost that project.
Yes.
But if you use GitHub and you download the repository and then open Xcode with it, all your changes, assuming you push them to the server, which we haven't gotten to yet, but assuming you push them to the server, now your house can burn down just fine.
No worries there.
No worries at all. At least you've... I mean, I'm sure you'd have other worries, but at least your project is not burnt to a crisp.
Yep. So. Yep. And that's one of the big bonuses of doing this, right? Is making your code base redundant in a few different places, where if something catastrophic does happen... you know, like say your computer just fries one day, like it's gone. Yeah. You can then connect to your GitHub repository on a new computer and then start from where you left off.
Yeah, you just clone that repository again and you're good to go.
Exactly.
You're working on, you know, a different computer. Let's say you get a new work computer and it's a fresh computer. You just get on the repository, you clone your project and you're good to go again.
Yep.
That's one of the great things about this. I guess kind of moving on from there.
So that handles commit, and now we have push.
So I don't know. Do we stress enough that like when you commit, so like I make changes in Xcode, I change some things through Xcode, and you know there's the source control button at the top. I can hit the commit button. I can look at all of my changes. So it actually like gives you a snapshot of like, here's everything you changed since the last time you committed.
Yep.
And you say, yep, I want to commit. And guess what it does right after you say that? Every time.
It commits. Pushes? No. I have no idea because I usually don't do this. In fact...
It tells you to write a comment.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So I don't use the source control tab. When I go to commit, I do git status first. Mm-hmm. And that will give you an overview of all the files that have changed since you've last started, or since you last committed.
That's good, yeah. Yeah, because I use GUIs and it does that for me, I don't use that. But that's, if you're using purely terminal, that makes sense.
Yep.
Zach, maybe you could tell me, if you try to commit without a comment through the terminal, will it let you? I don't think it'll let you.
I honestly don't know because it's so ingrained in me to
write a comment.
I do git commit dash m comment. And it's one of those things where you really, really want to comment your commits.
Yes,
like you need to comment every single commit. And they need to be very descriptive comments.
Yes.
Don't say checking code in on Tuesday.
Like, although I've seen comments like that before.
Oh, no, they exist, but they're not good. So if something gets corrupted and you need to actually go back and find where a specific change was made, you can't.
Yeah, write yourself good comments, please, 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 please. I mean, a lot of the GUI tools will allow you to look at the git commit and look at the changes, but sometimes that just takes so long to try to find one little thing you did. If you could just, like... Just think about like what the changes were that you made when you hit commit. Like, I made this better. I fixed this bug. I did this. This is why I feel like this is done.
Yes.
Write that down.
Yes.
It will save yourself so much time in the future.
Yes, I agree. I have a question for you. Mm, how often do you commit your changes?
I try to only commit working code. Now, this is not always the case, but basically, say again.
Well, so what is working code? So like, if you were working on a feature and an hour later your code was working, but that feature wasn't fully implemented yet, would you commit that if you were coming back to it like the next day?
As long as the code can compile and do something.
Okay.
Like, let's say I'm like partially there. Like, yep. I need to show an alert box. And so I've got it so the alert box shows up, and but it doesn't have the right language in it. Like, it doesn't say the right words. That might be fine. Like, let's say it's the end of the workday. Mm-hmm. As long as it compiles and I can, you know, run it, I can acknowledge in the comments that this is not done and commit that. I'm okay with that. Not, some people are not okay with that.
I'm in the same boat with you. That's the exact same thing I do.
Yeah. Every so often... It, I'd say this is a really bad practice. I will commit non-working code if it's at the end of the day and I need to get going or somebody's distracting me and I need to save my code. Sometimes I will still commit it. I don't like doing that, but I will make sure in the comments I say, this is not, like, I will bold, like, you know, I'll make it really loud for me. It's like, this is not working code. Yep. I stopped because of this and... this is where I left off, and this is where I need to go, you know, start again when I get back on this.
Yeah, we are on the exact same page because I do I do the same thing because there are plenty of times when, especially with my Xcode project, my Swift project, where I know it might be a couple of days before I get back to it, but I really want to have my code committed just in case.
Especially if you're, like, working at home and then working in the office or, like, working on a different computer or something like that. Like, it's, you want to get that on the server because you've done work.
Right.
You know, you may not have gotten to a state that, you know, is good enough to ship, but, you know, you don't want to lose those changes.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, we do the same thing. I try not to. Yep. And if it's one of those things where I'm working on it at lunch and I'll be working on it again later on in the evening, I won't commit it.
Yeah.
Just because I know I'll be back to it soon.
If you have a good branching strategy, I think this is fine. If your branching strategy sucks, then obviously don't commit stuff that you want other people to see.
My trunk doesn't branch. You don't want other
people to see. Yeah. Yeah, so that would be bad. Yeah. Don't do that. But we haven't gotten to branching yet.
So we talked about push.
All right. Well, we talked about commit. I think we just finished up commit. We mentioned push.
Okay.
So push is what happens when, okay, so I've committed code onto my local repository. Now what I want to do is take those local changes and push them onto the server and make the server have those changes too.
Yes. So that it'll synchronize your local Git repository and the server Git repository.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, on the branch that you're on. It won't necessarily do it with other branches, right. But... yeah, on the branch that you've made changes and that you are currently working on, you can push those changes.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, so now after you push, that means, so say you were working on the same, say we're working on the same feature, you push your code up, I can then go and pull that code to make sure I have the latest working copy.
Yep, and that's often what happens if you know, a group of you are working on the same feature, like in the same office, this happens to me all the time. You know, I'll talk to one of my coworkers and be like, "Hey, pull down the latest changes. I just fixed that thing that I said I was doing."
Yep.
And that's exactly what happens.
And so when we talk about GitHub, we hear a lot about pull requests.
Yes.
What is a pull request?
We haven't gotten there yet, so let's table that for a second. We'll get to that when we get to branching and merging.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, hold that thought.
All right. Help.
Yeah, hold that thought. Yep. There's another command that's also very important, and that's fetch.
Mm-hmm.
And so fetch basically tells you what has – basically gives you an up-to-date list of all the branches and where they're at. So it's – pooling will basically do the same thing. But on one branch, if I remember right, I could be wrong. Somebody correct me on that. Fetch, I believe, will do all branches and give you a snapshot back about what's going on.
That's cool.
I know this because, at least what I use fetch for is in SourceTree, it won't update until it fetches. So, and often it does a lot of fetching in the background to keep the local, you know, the GUI in the GUI that I see that has all the branches and everything. It will fetch to keep that up to date. And if for any reason it's out of date, I can explicitly hit the fetch button and make sure it's up to date.
Oh, cool.
Now, I've never used it on the terminal, so I don't know. Have you used fetch on the terminal at all?
I use about 5 commands on the terminal, and fetch is not one of them.
All right, so I don't know how useful it is on the terminal, because if you do a pool, that would, I would think, accomplish the same thing.
Yeah. But, it sounds like it would.
Yeah, but there's probably reason to do fetch as well. This is why I don't use it on the terminal, because I get confused with what you can and cannot do on the terminal. Or at least what you should or should not.
Understandable.
Do. Yeah. Reset. This is also a command that I use all the time when, let's say I want to pull down Zach's changes. You know, I want to pull down your changes, Zach, and I have already made changes to my local repository in between, let's say we're both working on the same bug.
Right.
You fix it first, and you push it up to the server.
Yes.
And now I've got code that I was trying to work at. I've decided, oh, okay, Zach got it done. I don't need my code anymore. How do I just clean up and get rid of the code that I'm working on? Because I don't use it anymore. I'm not going to use it anymore.
Right.
That would be reset.
Okay. So it just goes through and it wipes it out from the last pull? Or last commit?
From last commit. Last commit. Yep.
So what if you committed and then pulled? So it would get rid of the pull?
So if... Wait, say that again.
So if you committed your changes and you worked on it and then you pulled from the server and then you did reset.
No, that reset would just take you back to the last commit.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Now there is a terminal. Yeah, there's a terminal command. Oh, geez. I'm probably getting everything confused. This is... I work in source tree all the time. That's what they call it, a source tree. But I do remember there's also a reset command that will actually essentially go, like, undo a commit, essentially.
Yeah.
So in that case, yes, if you're on the terminal and you do reset, that will undo a commit.
Okay.
Potentially. But I don't know how much it does that. I will use it very, very sparingly. You can also explicitly say where you want to put the changes. And I will often say, basically put it on head. Head is like a weird concept that I don't know if I'm prepared to explain. So say there's this mystical thing called head in Git. And it's basically where you're at in the timeline of code changes.
Okay.
And when I do my resets in the terminal, I will say put everything on head. And basically that undoes the last commit and puts it all into local changes.
So okay.
The most recent changes. Yeah. Now, if you're using something like Git Tower or Source Tree, at least I believe Git Tower's got something like this, I'm sure, but Source Tree definitely. Basically, what it's doing is just resetting, undoing all my changes to the last commit. Source Tree will not let me undo a commit.
Okay.
So that's kind of why I know about that terminal command, because like every so often I've had to do that. I've had to undo a commit, and it does have like an undo commit command, mm-hmm. but what it does is it reverts the changes and then makes another commit with those reverted changes. I don't want that.
Right.
I want to actually like literally undo a commit. You can do that in Git, you have to use the terminal for it. So just be very careful with that. So and unfortunately, it's the same terminology. So that's what makes that kind of suck.
Yeah, that's not good.
So, yeah, this is another reason I suggest using a GUI, because it tries to protect you, and that's good.
We need protection.
Yeah, although. One of the things I've learned about Git is it's actually pretty hard to get into a state you can't undo or get back to.
Yeah.
Like even if
on that as well.
Yeah. Like even if you've done something which you feel is catastrophic, you could pretty much always undo it. But that's a longer discussion, I think. So we're discussing the basics here.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So now we're going to get into something that's more, you know, the more complex things you can do.
Right, the things that I should probably be doing, and I understand to a certain degree, but me just working on my own code, I don't. And I should do this for each feature I build.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you should practice this stuff for, like, on your individual projects, because it will get you, it'll make you better for when you start seeing this in the wild with other projects, right, with working with other people.
Right. So that the first one, the big one, is branching.
Yes.
Branching. So when you branch a repository, you make a new so it's I don't want to say clone, because that's its own word.
Yep.
You're basically working on another set of files. What's the best way to explain this?
No, yeah, it's basically
it's a way for you to work on the code base without messing with the original code base.
Yeah, I guess that's the right way to say that. You could literally have, like, if there's three people all wanting to start at the same set of code, like, you've got a working app, right?
Yes.
Three people want to work on this working app. You don't want everybody just making changes to that app and pushing it to the server, because if you try to make changes yourself and push to the server, it's going to say you've got a merge conflict.
Yes, or like
you can't do that.
Yeah, and I've seen this as well. You just end up overrunning someone else's changes.
Yeah, you don't want that either. No. So you want each of these developers to have their own, like you said clone. It's almost that way. Their own set of code. Their set of changes that only they see that nobody else affects.
Right.
And so that's a branch. You branch off of your initial line of code. And so you can have multiple people working on the same starting set of code. They make their changes to it. And when they're ready, they do something called merge.
And this is the part where my mind gets blown. This is where you run into merge conflicts, and you have to figure out which code needs to stay and which codes you're going to overwrite.
Yes, and so this is, I think, merge conflicts alone are the reason there's a whole job built out of this.
I agree.
And so, like in the past, places that I've worked, the configuration manager will sit at the computer. They'll be the only ones allowed to make changes on the computer. And they'll have the two engineers sitting next to them, and they'll look at the code and say, all right, is this important? And you know, the engineer to the right will be like, yep, we need that. And the person to the left will go, wait, that's old. You know, I made this change, and this fixes that. Yes. We need both sets. So that's usually what happens. You need to solve a merge conflict, you really need both engineers sitting next to each other, looking at the code, deciding what's important.
Have you, and this is something that happened to me recently, I've actually had two branches. I was working simultaneously on two branches. One was to fix a bug, and the other was to create a new feature. Uh-huh. And so we had to merge both branches back into the trunk. And so you're not sitting there with another software developer. You're sitting there by yourself, and the configuration manager is going, so which one do you want to keep? This one?
And I was about to say that, like, oftentimes when you're working on open source projects or other things like that, like, you need to solve merge conflicts yourself. Yep. And that can get really tricky. That's the tough part. And that's it. With practice, you get better at this.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So
and there's many different strategies with this too. So we don't have time to go into all of that. Yeah.
Yep. I know my last merge happened a couple of weeks ago, and it took about 2.5 hours.
Oh geez. Wow.
Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah. So
it was fun. Well, we were seeing some really old code when the configuration manager pulled up the commits. He was like, "What is this from it was back from like February. And I was like, that should be in there now. Like, that is in production. And this branch was actually cut from the production trunk, so that there should not be a conflict there. So that was a whole lot of fun.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting.
You got it all figured out eventually.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing is that Git does recognize when you've erased things that you shouldn't have,
yes.
Basically did things you shouldn't have, and presents some sort of means of solving those issues.
Yes. Well, even in GitHub, you can go back and check old commits and see, like, the exact lines. Yeah. That were changed. They're you know, highlighted green and red for things you put in and things you took out.
And so now we get into something called pull requests.
Yes. What is a pull request?
So I have my own branch, and so you mentioned trunk, right? That's a subversion way of thinking.
Yes.
Usually we have master.
Okay.
With Git. Oftentimes we also have a develop or a development branch.
Yes.
That branches off of master.
Yes.
And so master is your production code, the stuff that everybody sees, you know, that's
exactly
that's what gets shipped.
That's what needs to be working 100% no flaws.
Yep. Yep. Development or develop is the developmental code changes, and when that's ready, that gets merged into master. And then you have feature branches. So branches off of develop that each individual developer will work on. And so when I finish my feature and I want to have it merged into develop, what I will do is submit a pull request. And basically it says, okay, I'm done with my feature. I want to merge it into develop. Here are all the changes I've made. Here is my documentation about what I changed, you know, like all my notes and for every commit. If you make terrible Git commit notes, then you've got to write them yourself right now.
Yes.
Because you need to be able to tell your team what's changed. So this is another reason to make good notes.
Yep. That stuff's public. And, like, everybody else is going to see that too.
Yep. Yep. And so then you basically, it sends an email out to everybody on the team that you want to review your code. And you cannot merge your code, well, depending on rules, but you should not merge your code into develop until you get approval from your team.
Interesting.
And so that's what a pull request is it's basically this email that goes out that everybody can look at, everybody can go to GitHub or whatever service you have, Bitbucket or whatnot, and look at your changes and basically say, yep, that's good to go, or make comments on certain lines, or, you know, suggest other ways of doing things, you know, and they could basically say, yeah, it's good to merge into develop or not.
Wow, with SVN that we use at work, that is, we just commit into our branch,
mm-hmm.
and there's no outside.
There's no way for you to do code reviews with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's one of the really nice things about. I don't know if it's a. I doubt it's a Git exclusive thing. I'm sure there are other ways of doing pull requests, and I believe it's basically through these services. It's not really a Git thing.
Right.
It's more of a GitHub thing. It's more of a Bitbucket thing. It's a, you know, it's a way of doing code reviews, and it's really nice because with those services, you can place rules around it. Like, you need at least one approval from these people. Or you need at least two approvals from these people, or you need an approval from every single one of these people before you can ever merge it into.
Oh, that's nice.
Into the
that kind of oversight's good.
Yep, yep. So, that's kind of nice. And plus, it provides a nice tool for actual code reviews, because you know, everybody's done like the, well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people have done like the code reviews where you like put your code up on to like a projector screen and people look at it that way. That's such a painful way to do code
really
reviews.
Is.
This is a way, like especially for remote employees, to basically like at your leisure look at the code, make comments, you know, and it keeps everybody informed.
Yep.
So
Yep, and that kind of communication is key, especially when, like you said, it comes to remote employees.
Yep, definitely. Okay, some other advanced things you could do, Stash. Zach, have you ever used Stash?
I've never once used Stash.
Okay, so let's take that example of, you and I are working on the same bug, and you're more focused than I am. I'm working on the bug, but
likely.
I see something else that needs to be fixed. So I start working on that, and that's why you get done first.
Okay.
And so it's like, oh, well, I want your changes, but I still want to keep the changes that I have, but I'm not done yet. Like, I don't want to commit it, but I'm not done.
Right.
So what I want to do is I want to set my changes aside, pull your stuff down, and then apply my changes on top of yours.
Oh, okay. So it's a multi-step process?
Actually, it's a single-step process. With Stash, all you do is you set it aside.
Oh, okay.
So you take all your changes. It essentially resets back to the commit, like we were talking about with reset, mm-hmm. and sets it. Basically just sets it aside. You can write a comment on. You can name it and describe it a little bit. Like I was working on this, and then Zach bugged me, and I needed to look at his
code. It happens.
Yes, something happens. Like that. Yeah. So. You set your code aside. It does save it to your local repository. It does not push it up to the server. So I can't get my stash from anywhere else. I only get it locally. Mm-hmm. And then I could pull down your changes, and then later I could apply my stash on top of your changes. Now, this is gonna be essentially the same thing as
I was about to say. You could still end up with conflicts, right?
You could still have merge conflicts with this. So you have to solve your own merge conflicts. But in this way, I can essentially just set aside my code and bring it back whenever I want.
That's really nice.
Yeah. So that's Stash. I use it all the time for that kind of thing, especially when I'm like not done with something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
especially if it's not that important.
If you stash your code, mm-hmm. make some more changes and stash again. How does?
Yep.
Can you?
It would just be a totally different stash.
Can you pull back either?
You have your choice. Okay. Like when you apply the stash, you can choose. At least on source tree, you could choose to apply and then delete it.
Oh, that's nice.
Or just apply it and you could keep it there. So you just always have this stash ready to go.
Yeah.
But I always apply and delete because that's really what I use the stash for.
Right.
Set it aside for a little bit and bring it back.
That sounds a little cleaner.
Yep. Yep. So that way I don't have like 20 different stashes that I don't know
exactly
doing with them. But that could happen, especially if the merge conflicts, it will not delete the stash. So at least on source tree.
Yeah. Okay.
Another thing to do is tagging. So have you used tagging at all? So.
Would you be surprised to hear that I have not?
No, I would not be surprised at all. We're talking about more advanced functions in Git, so understandable.
I have not tagged a single thing.
So basically a tag is like marking a very particular commit. It's just putting a tag on it, like a particular label. And you can find them later. You can search for your tags and see just your tags. So what I use tags for are releases.
Okay.
So whenever I do a release, like even a QA release, I will tag that so I know exactly which commit it was that had, that went out to somebody else.
Okay.
And
nice.
So that way when they tell me something went wrong and I ask what version it was, I can always look back, find that commit, get it on my computer, and look at the code. Even if it's like a couple versions back, I could still look at it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Tagging is basically the same thing as a branch. It's the same thing as branching. It does have, like, in the form of like the way Git works, it is basically a branch.
Okay.
But it's called a tag, so it's got like some sort of flag on it, so you can search for it as a tag instead.
Okay.
So
nice.
Yeah. But basically it's the same thing as a branch.
Okay. Cool. And so we're on to the last one, rebase.
Yeah. So rebasing. There's a lot of this is where we get to like the I guess the politics of Git, whether or not you should rebase or not. Yeah. There have been many an argument about rebasing at work. There are the factions that say you should never rebase. There are the factions that say you should always rebase. And then there's the factions that are like, you should rebase for every feature.
Oh,
so
okay. So what is...
but what is, yeah, what is rebasing?
That was what I was about to ask.
Yeah.
Why are people so up in arms about it?
Yeah, so rebasing... how do I describe this? So we were talking about branching and merging, right?
Yes.
So I finished my feature, and I want to basically merge my changes into develop. And so there may have been several commits on develop, and basically whatever state develop is, you know, as far up as it you know, the most recent change in develop, I want to merge my features code into that, right?
Yeah.
I can do that.
Okay.
And it's basically whatever develop is and whatever my feature code is, whatever the differences are, I'm going to rectify that, and what the next commit is going to be those changes rectified.
I see.
All merged together.
Okay.
Rebasing is taking what I have done with, let's see here, taking what I've done on my branch and effectively doing that with every commit up to the final, like up to the most recent version of develop.
Oh.
Okay. So it's instead of just that last commit and in my, like the most recent develop and the most recent of my feature branch, merging those together,
yeah,
I'm going sequentially through every single, it's like basically every single develop commit,
yeah,
up to the point, up to the most recent one, and applying those changes to my branch.
Nice. Okay.
So what sucks about this is you essentially lose the time at which you made your commit.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. So normally, like, if you're looking at history, and this is, you know, a big thing in configuration management, I want to know when you made your changes, right?
Yeah.
So when I make a commit, it has a timestamp.
Right.
If I rebase, what it's doing is it's making new commits on top, you know, these merge commits. It's making brand new commits on top. So any change I've had, now they are getting a new timestamp of when this rebasing.
So you're saying it's moving it forward closer to the present?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that when I hit rebase and it goes through its process, all of my commits on my branch will have that date now.
Oh, that sucks.
That kind of sucks. Yeah. But now it's in order of when the code is actually applied to the code, like on develop. So it's now showing the code in the order which it actually does get applied, whereas before it could have it's all a mishmash,
right?
If you branch and merge at will.
So are you a rebaser?
So my team is that hybrid approach.
Okay.
We don't rebase every commit. So that's actually something that I did with... Oh, what I had done with a previous team is that we would rebase everything and we would not have merge commits. So when you merge, you can choose to have a commit that basically says this is what everything changed, and you would see the branch coming back into the other branch.
Right.
So if you do a rebase properly, you don't need those merge commits, and so your develop line will just be one long line, and all your features will just be additional commits on top of each other.
Okay, interesting.
And a lot of open source projects really like this. They'll also, I don't remember what the command is, but it's like they'll squash all their changes down to one commit for that branch.
Yeah.
So that's something they would also do.
Okay.
I don't like this because I actually do want to see those changes, but I want to make sure that they look separate from what's on develop, and that the only commits on develop are the changes that were made.
Right.
Like are the final changes, not the changes that are made.
Right.
Are the final changes.
Okay. Wow, that sounds okay.
It's really complicated.
Yeah, it is.
But then we have another team at work that does not do rebasing at all. And if you look at their code, it works, but it's really difficult to see who's working on what, at what point does everything merge together. It's like this tangled mess.
Yeah.
And I would be hesitant to make a lot of changes because I wouldn't know where people were.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I am a rebaser, but
you're a rebase light.
Yeah, but only on features.
Yep.
So
okay, that makes sense. Cool.
Yeah,
I like it.
So hopefully, we got pretty technical towards the end there, and this is a really, really hard subject to describe on a podcast.
Yes, it is.
So hopefully that does help some people.
I mean, it helped me, so I'm glad we had this conversation.
That's good.
Yeah, we went into a few of the unknowns for me in Git. Yeah. It's something I need to do. I do need to feel a little more comfortable about. So it helped me.
This is just really like, I know this is something that like every one of us as developers need to learn how to do, but this is like a really hard subject to teach. Because of all the abstract topics around it, like the concepts around it. I know, like for me, I'm a self-taught Gitter, I guess.
Correct.
If you want to call it that. So I had to learn on the job, and for 2 years, nobody would be sharing my repository. It was just me.
Right.
And so, but I did it because I wanted to back up my work, and if anything went wrong, I wanted to be able to go back to things I did, And it took about 2 years for me to learn how to do branching at all, period.
Wow.
Literally 2 years.
Yeah, I can see that working by yourself.
Yeah. And then it took like another year for, to learn how to rebase. So now I feel pretty confident with both of those things, but like there's still so much I don't understand. It is something you need to learn when it comes to this. And I want to do like a meetup where I try to explain this, but I have avoided doing that for, a year and a half now. People have asked me to do it, and I've been avoiding it because it's a difficult and complex topic.
How long are your normal meetups?
We usually start at 7 and end at 10.
Okay, so that's enough time to cover most of this.
But we usually have like a half hour at the beginning for a little bit of socializing and getting to know each other, and then towards the end it's a half hour to 45 minutes of socialization.
Oh, okay.
So really it's like an hour and a half.
So you could just jam this podcast.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, just put it this way. So really this whole thing was to make it easier on you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It all makes sense now.
This is my practice for the meetup that I'm going to give next month.
Perfect. Well, you're on record now.
Yeah, there we go.
You said it.
I did. I said it. It was said.
So is there anything else you want to cover before we...
I did want to mention some alternatives. I know we did mention them, but Subversion is out there. Tortoise SVN is a fantastic tool if you're into Subversion.
Yep, that's what we use at work, Tortoise SVN.
Cool. Yeah, I really like Tortoise. There is Tortoise Git, I think it's Tortoise Git. But if I remember right, it doesn't work as well as the SVN version.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's Mercurial out there as well. It's command, for Subversion, it's SVN. For Mercurial, it's HG.
That makes sense.
That makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah, molecular formula for mercury.
There you go. Not everybody knew that. I didn't know that.
Well, that's where my biology background comes in handy.
There you go. I had to learn that fairly recently, a couple years ago. But like when I first heard of Mercurial, I was like, what? Why is it HG?
Yeah, go look at a periodic table of elements.
Yep, it's there.
Very nice.
Yeah, but I think that's all I got. Do you have anything more you want to say about Git?
Just real quick, this is my complete Git rundown. So I've worked in my code for a while. Git status, shows me all the changes. Yep. Git add dash capital A adds them to the local repository, I believe. Yep. Git status again to make sure that all of those changes made it. Git commit dash M with the message. Git status again, and then git push.
Yep.
And that is my rundown from the terminal every time I do it.
I challenge you to download SourceTree and see if you like that better.
Okay, I may have to.
Give it a shot. It's free, so you really should have no arguments.
But then I have to learn a new thing,
and that's well, you already know it. You just it's just less things you have to do.
Oh, this is all complicated. No, I'm looking at it now, and it does look it looks good.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of it.
Awesome.
I've been using SourceTree for about 4 years now. So.
Okay, well, I would download it, but it would probably blow up my connection.
Yeah, do it later. Do it later.
Yep.
All right. So, yeah, I think that's all we got for Git today.
Yeah.
Do we have any shout-outs we want to make?
I do. I want to shout out Rick for leaving us a review in iTunes. Went on and left us, it looks like a 5-star review and, or a 5-star rating and a written review.
Awesome. Thanks, Rick.
Yeah, no, that means so much to us. And anybody else that has left us a review or a rating in iTunes, I think we're up to 11 ratings now. It helps us get the show out there and possibly get more listeners.
Yeah. Really, really appreciate anybody who takes the time to do that. I know, like, for me, it's so difficult to leave a review for anything.
I'm the same way.
I honestly don't think I've left a review for anything on the App Store or the podcast, but I need to, because now that I'm on this side of the gate, it means so exactly. much to us. So thank you for taking your time to do that.
Yes. And I'd also like to say thank you to South Hills Code on Twitter for the suggestion for the show.
Oh yeah, that's right. You guys were the ones that got us to do this.
Yeah. So hopefully this helped out some. Oh, okay. Let's go through this. So sharpshooters on GitHub.
Yes.
How do I download that? Like, I don't want it to be a repository. Like, I'm not working on the code. I want it as a feature.
Okay.
So how do I get that? Do you know?
Yeah, so you have me do this on the fly because I don't remember exactly where it is. There's the place where you get the there's a download link or a download drop down, and you could choose to download via. This is on the top of my head. You could do SSH, you can do HTTPS, or you can just download a zip file.
Oh, okay.
And if you just want the code at where master is right then and there, you could actually specify other branches too in GitHub. But if you just, like, it defaults to master. So if you want the latest code, the latest production code, you want to go to that little dropdown, change it from SSH or HTTPS to the zip file one. I don't remember exactly what it's called.
Okay.
And then there's a download button. You just do that, and it'll just straight up download all the code. You unzip it, and it might even unzip it automatically. I don't remember. And then you can do what the instructions say.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. It reminded me that South Hills Code suggested this, saying that they were trying to download stuff from the show's GitHub page, and they didn't know how. So, yeah, that led to this. I figured we should probably answer their question.
No, that's
a good point.
Yeah.
They listen to all of this, and they're like, that still wasn't what I wanted.
We still don't get it.
Can you do a part two?
Yeah. Well, you can also clone it.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You can do
PR. Sure.
I would love to start seeing some PRs come in on changes. I don't know if I have time to review them, but you might just get an automatic approval
from
me.
Yep, everything gets the thumbs up from us.
Actually, I don't even know if we set up rules for any of
I don't think we did. I don't think we did.
Yeah. So you might be able to just make changes at will.
Go for it. Good luck. We're not doing anything with it, so.
Yep. So, as always, we want to give a shout out to the Swift Coders Network of Podcasts. That's the Learn Swift Podcast, us, and Swift Coders.
Correct.
So
everybody go download the latest episodes from all of our brothers on this network. Yep. And give them a listen.
Yep. Yep. My dog apparently wants to say something. What do you want to say?
Oh,
there you
That's
go.
Very so that's, appropriate.
That's Rocky's shout out to all you
yep.
out there. Yeah. Yeah, see, there you go. I gotta stop looking at him.
don't poke the beast.
I know, right? Zach, how do we get a hold of you?
You can reach me on Twitter. My handle is at zfalgout1. That is at Z F as in Frank A L G O U T and then the number one. How about you, Steven? Or Rock, does Rocky have a Twitter yet?
He's just not going to stop.
He's probably just really upset that he doesn't have a Twitter.
Yeah, that's probably it. You can reach me at SW Berard. That's B as in boy, E-R-A-R-D as in dog. And we also have the Fireside Swift Rocky. He's just not going to stop. We also have the Fireside Swift Twitter page. What's that
it's,
one?
It's at Fireside _ Swift.
Cool.
Yep. Oh, and if you want to send an email, that's firesideswift@gmail.com. We have so many ways for you to get in touch.
So many ways.
Come on. So send us an email. Send us a tweet. We love interacting with our listeners.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this is...
Rocky doesn't want it to end. He just wants it to keep on going.
He just wants to keep it going. Yep.
Sorry. Right. Sorry, well, Rocky.
Yeah. Sorry, Rocky. He's not. Yep. He's yeah. He's not forgiven. He's not a very forgiving beast.
Oh, well.
All right. Well, thank you all for coming out, and we'll see you next week.
Yep. Have a good one, y'all.
Have you ever read any of Michael Crichton's books?
I've read plenty of Michael Crichton's books.
What's your favorite?
Now I have to do research. I remember liking Jurassic Park. You wrote that, right?
Yeah, Jurassic Park's pretty fantastic. Yeah, I think I've read like every single one of his books.
I believe I have read most of them, but I need to find an actual list.
I'm sure Wikipedia has it.
Yeah. So Andromeda Strain, that was a pretty good one.
That one was a fan. That's a classic.
Yeah, that was a good one. Jurassic Park, Lost World.
Yeah.
And I read those back when I was in like elementary school.
Yeah, I know those are not elementary school.
No,
books.
They're not. Not even a little bit.
I actually used Jurassic Park in my AP English Lit, what's the final exam? Like, in high school when you take AP English and you have that final test at the end of the year.
I never had that problem.
You never had to take an AP
thing?
Well, it got me college. I used Jurassic Park and it got me out of English for all of college.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's pretty amazing. How did you swing that?
So there's, I think you have to write like three essays. So there's like three questions and you write three essays. And the first three are based off of like you read this, you read like a long, that's a short story. You read a short story and then it asks you a question. You write an essay about that, about the short story.
Yep.
Or poem or something. So there's three of those. And then the fourth one is open-ended. It asks you a question. It says, like, of all the books you've read, tell us about a person that, write an essay about a person that does this or something, like this. And I remember thinking at the time, man, Macbeth would be really great for this essay,
yeah.
Whatever the question was. But I couldn't remember all the names of all the characters. And I thought that would look really bad in the essay that I didn't actually know the names of the characters.
I can see how there would be marks taken off for that.
Yeah.
There was this other guy. He was like a friend to this dude, and
yeah,
we'll call him Clyde.
Yeah. And Bono over
what
here.
What does Shakespeare know about words anyway?
Yeah. Then I'll name this one Dude Face.
Yep, Dude Face. Classic Shakespeare.
Yeah. So, yeah, so because I couldn't remember the names, I didn't use Macbeth. So I'm like scraping my head. Yes, Rocky. So I'm like trying to figure out, like, you know, what other book I had read. And it has to be one of the.
Yes, come here. I am still here.
Yes, I will hold you, and then you will be silent. So you have to use one of the approved AP English books, you know, of the list. And I remember, like, a long time ago, like in junior high, I remember hearing that Jurassic Park was on this AP English list. And, you know, I was like, oh, you know, I got to read it because it's, you know, a book that'll be useful in high school.
Right.
And I remember loving the book for how graphic and terrible
it was.
It was
very graphic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great for a junior high kid.
Oh, I ate it up. I want to say I was in like sixth grade when I read it.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. But what's really funny is because I actually read it more than once. You know, I actually read it a couple times through high school too because I loved that book so much. That I actually knew the names of the characters. I knew it was an approved book. It didn't quite fit with what the essay was supposed to be about, but it was close enough.
Yeah.
And so I wrote my essay on Jurassic Park, and I passed the test, and so I didn't have to take. I think that one test gave me 6 units of English credits in for college.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, way to go, junior high Steve.
You really read
the tea leaves on that one.
Right?
Dang.
Yeah.
So did you read Lost World as well?
Yes. Like I said, I think I've read like every single one of his books.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. Let me see.
So,
thank you. Now, then I'm actually looking at the list.
Do you see that he had one?
So I read all the ones where it's by Michael Crichton. There's some that he went under a pseudonym.
Yeah. Did you see that he has a new book with dealing with dinosaurs?
Is that this Dragon Teeth one?
Seems like it. But it's not. I don't know if it's set in.
Is it? I haven't. No, Jurassic. I guess it just got. I guess it just got published. It's 2017.
Yeah.
Because I've read Micro. I've read Pirate Latitudes.
I don't think I've read Pirate Latitudes.
That one's pretty good. If you like pirates, it's very
pirate-y. I love pirates. Sir Francis Drake, probably my favorite pirate.
I'm trying to think who that was.
He was the first person to actually circumnavigate the globe.
Was he the one that went around?
He was a privateer.
Okay.
For England.
Okay.
You know, during all of their wars.
He
actually Magellan gets credit for it, but Magellan died on the trip.
Okay.
I'm fairly sure. This is the part where I just
Cape Magellan.
Yeah, this is the part where I just spout out all of these things like I know what I'm talking about, and it turns out to be completely wrong.
Sounds like Fireside Story.
Yeah. Exactly. So this is coming from my fever-addled brain just trying to remember things. Yeah, no, Sir Francis Drake. It's an awesome name.
Yeah, that's a good name.
Yep. English sea captain and privateer of the Elizabethan era. Okay, he carried out the second circumnavigation, but I'm pretty sure Magellan died on his. You know what's always funny, though, is, like, people say Magellan went around the world first, but weren't there other people on that boat?
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, yeah, but he's the captain, right? So that's why he gets the credit for it.
Yeah, but good luck doing that without everybody else.
So anyways, back to the topic at hand.
Are you sure you don't want to talk about pirates anymore?
Well, I mean, pirates are great, but we're talking about our favorite Michael Crichton book.
That's true.
So I would have to say my favorite Michael Crichton book is Eaters of the Dead.
I don't think I've read that one.
Also called 13th Warrior.
13th Warrior as in that Tom Cruise movie?
Tom Cruise?
Is it Tom Cruise?
It's like,
oh, Antonio Banderas?
Yeah, yeah, Antonio Banderas.
Like I said, fever-addled brain. And that that came out of nowhere.
So what I love about Eaters of the Dead is it was a challenge by another writer.
Like, oh, seriously?
He got into like an argument with somebody else, if I remember this right. And the other writer challenged him to write, let's see, he said he could, I think Michael Crichton basically said he can make anything interesting. And the other writer was like, oh yeah, well, I'll bet you can't make Beowulf interesting. And
really,
and Michael Crichton's like, I'm going to write it in the most boring way possible and people will still eat it up.
Well, and wait, he went with Beowulf though? Like,
so Eaters of the Dead is the story of Beowulf as seen through the eyes of a Muslim historian.
Yeah.
So it's this guy who was like, he was expelled from his home for, I think he's sleeping with a caliph's wife or something like that. Uh-huh. And so he gets banished, but he's given the task of documenting the Northmen. And so he goes to, you know, he goes up to the northern tribes and basically just documents as dryly as possible what he sees.
Wow.
And he basically is there for the story of Beowulf, and he writes the story of Beowulf. But as if it was like, instead of like the stories like of Beowulf has like fantastical creatures and all that. Well, this is written like, okay, so I actually like it's all believable now.
Right.
So instead of dragons, it's like an army of men who are walking down the mountain with torches and dressed like bears and stuff. And so, from a distance, it looks like a worm that's coming down the mountainside of fire.
Yeah.
So the fire worm.
Right. Yep.
You know, they're not, these guys are not actually, you know, beasts that, they're dressed like bears because they're part of this cult thing. It's really fascinating. Really, really, really fascinating. And it's a really, really good read, even though it's funny that it was like, literally written as if a historian wrote it. So it's like, should be even more boring than the story that most people consider boring, which I think Beowulf is a really fascinating story.
I agree. But,
you know,
I mean, I'm just going to get all naked and fight some monsters because I don't want any advantage over them. It's how that boils down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's incredible. Okay. Well, yeah. So, we need to come up with a Fireside Swift reading list.
A reading club, yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. It's going to have a bunch of Crichton books on it, some King books.
Yep.
Obviously, the Wheel of Time books will be on there.
We'll put Rothfuss on there, even though you haven't read him.
Which one was that?
The Name of the Wind.
We were talking about that at one point.
The Name of the Wind.
Okay. Yeah, we just need to make this list so I know what these are. Like, I don't even remember what was that one series that we both knew about that I couldn't remember.
The Malazan Book of the Fallen.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
It was so good. We give you a million characters and they're all going to be interesting.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
God. Did you ever get, hold on. Because you said you didn't finish that one, right?
I don't think so.
Let's see.
I don't remember how far I got though.
Where my two favorite characters were T-Hole and Bug.
Okay.
Basically, one of them is like just this crazy eccentric guy. He just wears a towel everywhere, and he ends up like being, let's see if I can remember. He ends up being so he's super intelligent, right? But he always acts like he's a moron. Just to fool everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And his manservant Bug is like an elder god.
Oh.
And Bug doesn't really want to be an Elder God, but they like, and they just joke back and forth. It's fantastic.
Was one of those guys like super fat?
You're thinking of the, oh God, what was his name? Yeah, he would hang out in that bar. He was known as the Eel. Let's see, the Eel.
That's one of the great things about these books, but also one of the terrible things. Like,
you have to remember all of the stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm.
All of the names.
Yeah, the Eel was super fat, and he turns out to be whatever his face is. Like, you don't know who. Like, everybody always talks about the Eel, and like he's this super shady character, and it turns out to be like this guy who just sits in the bar all the time that everybody thinks is drunk.
Huh.
And he's actually the one like pulling all of the strings. Krupp. Krupp Krupp. K-R-U-P-P-E.
Yes. That was nothing. Like,
and he rides his donkey everywhere. That's right, yes.
I'd be talking to my buddy Kerry about the book, you know, as I was, you know, books as I was reading, because he would loan them to me and then we would talk about them. And the names were so weird, and of course you're reading them, you're never pronouncing
yes.
them, that when we would talk about it, every so often I would not know who he was talking about, because in my head I would have pronounced their name differently through the whole book.
Yeah, no, I did until, the same thing.
Yeah, until we would actually like try to talk about it, I'd be like, Krupp, Krupp.
Yep, Kruppe. Wait, who,
what?
Is that the coffee
Kruppe?
Thing?
Yeah, what?
Oh, yeah, no, that... There are just so many, and they come out of nowhere.
Yeah. It takes you, like, a half a book to really understand what's going
yes,
on.
Yes, it does. And that half a book isn't, like, 150 pages. It's, like, 600 pages.
No. Yeah, it's, like, 600 pages. And then you're, like, the whole time you're completely lost.
Yeah, you're, like...
And then, yeah, about halfway through, it's, like...
It just kind of clicks.
It's starting to come together now. And then, like, the next 300 pages are, like, super exciting.
Yes.
Like, awesome. Like... Yeah, and then, like, the last 300 are just, like, you know, and then this happened.
Yep. Oh, what?
Actually, no, those go to the bitter
no,
end.
They,
they go, like,
yeah, no,
right
they
to,
go to the, yeah, very, like, things.
Like, the last, it's, like, the last chapter that's, like, it ends. Like, you're, like, how do they solve this? And then, like, the last chapter, it's, like, all, everything's all figured out.
Yep. So, you read Gardens of the Moon.
Yes.
And did you read Memories of Ice?
I probably did, because that's only book three.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I think so.
So, Whiskey Jack?
I've definitely read House of Chains, so I definitely
okay. have. So, where Whiskey Jack dies at the very end? What? Like he has that's in Memories of Ice.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's one of those things. Whiskey Jack was my favorite.
Yeah. Rocky.
But
hold on, I'm almost
yeah.
done. Sit.
Yeah, no, that's
sit.
I just
sit.
All of these characters are fantastic. Quick Ben.
Yeah. Wait, so he actually dies or does he like come
he
back?
He dies, but then he ascends with the other bridge burners. And that's the other thing I like. I like their deity system thing, where it's like
yeah, I like the whole yeah.
You have all of these like warring gods, and they have their own champions, and
yeah, and it like it gets extremely complicated, but very cool.
Oh, it's
like
super complicated.
Yeah, Steven Erikson's got his like whole rule system for how everything works. I need to read these again. Like, I just need to own these.
Yeah, I know. Me too. Because I did the same thing. I borrowed these from my brother-in-law.
Yeah. I wonder how much they cost.
It can't be a ton.